40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The USA's Olympic women's soccer team will be going for its fourth consecutive gold medal when action kicks off August 3rd in Brazil. Keep in mind, VOA Olympic fans, while the opening ceremony is August 5th in Rio de Janeiro, both the men's and women's football tournaments will already be underway. In the 12-team women's competition, the reigning world champion USA will play New Zealand in its opening match August 3rd in Belo Horizonte. The American women, led by head coach Jill Ellis, are trying to become the first team to have back-to-back international success. That is, win a World Cup and then an Olympic gold medal. Sunny Side of Sports reporter Ben Cento joins us now with more on the U.S. women's team.
The world number one American women have been very successful lately. They're the reigning World Cup champions, and they're going for yet another Olympic gold medal in Rio. Head coach Jill Ellis held a teleconference where she talked about the difference in preparations for the World Cup and the Olympics.
One of the things that, you know, I've really looked into is, you know, why has the repeat never been done? Is it, you know, is it a change in personnel? Is it complacency? Is it, you know, is it timing to make sure that that doesn't happen? But I think a lot of individual meetings in this last camp. And, you know, that was one of the questions I posed the players, you know, are you as hungry? Do you feel as focused? And the resounding response was yes. You know, a lot of the players sort of said once the roster's named and once you get down into Brazil itself, it becomes then just this laser focus. But I think that the players, certainly for the younger ones, that, you know, they don't really know exactly what they're going to see down there. But I feel like this year playing some of the bigger teams has vetted them, playing in front of full stadiums has vetted them. But I think the players want to make history, want to try and be the first team to go back-to-back. So, I think you had players on the end of their careers in the last World Cup. So, you know, was there a sense of we've got to get this done, you know, sooner rather than later? Most certainly. But I think this group is as hungry to kind of prove themselves and make their mark as a new team. And, I think we've got a lot of good balance in terms of players that have been there before and players that are going to bring something to the game and on and off the field.
And let's give a sunny side of sports shout out to Crystal Dunn, who I had a chance to talk with before she made the Olympic roster. Crystal is the reigning National Women's Soccer League Most Valuable Player, but her club performance with the Washington Spirit has not met her expectations. But Coach Ellis doesn't seem too concerned, as Crystal has been a key asset for Team USA recently.
Ultimately, it's what is she doing in here against other national teams, against her teammates in training, and she's been very consistent and done very well. She's got, I don't know if she's got a slightly different role. I think she played central a lot more last year with Mark Parsons. I think she's more of a wide player for Jim DeBera. So, you know, and they have a slightly different makeup in their team. So it doesn't bother me in terms of, you know, is she not scoring goals? As long as she's playing well and contributing, you know, what I tell the wide players is, you know, if you're getting assists for scoring goals or setting people up, I mean, that's a big part of your job. And I think she's been doing that. So, no, I'm really, you know, really happy for Crystal, really excited where she is. I think she's again, a player that has incredible versatility. We could play her across any one of our front three and potentially in a 10 if we needed to. So I think she's, going to be great for us.
Coach Ellis will guide an American squad that will compete in a talented Group G that also features world number 3 France, world number 17 New Zealand, and world number 24 Colombia. Jill Ellis expects a different strategy from each team, with all three bringing a new challenge each match.
We played New Zealand many times in friendlies, and I think we played them at the last Olympics, if I'm right. And they're an athletic team. They like to press. It's going to be interesting, them playing us in the first game, and that's where we kind of have to be prepared for anything is, you know, do they want to press us and open themselves up behind, or are they going to sit in a little bit? I think Colombia will most likely sit and stay organized and look to counter, and France will play head-to-head straight up. So I think it's three great challenges for us. Three world-class teams that have been in World Cups and Olympics, so it's not like they're debutantes. So I think they're going to be challenging games. I mean, I said this the other day. It's like you play, almost a quarter finalist of the World Cup in your group play. You're potentially playing a semi finalist in the World Cup of your quarter final here. So it's just a lot more concentrated in terms of the teams and the talent. So it's going to be really competitive. But I think the three games are going to actually prepare us in terms of what team would we face in the quarters. I think we'd have played three very different teams, which I think will help us.
Team USA will have their work cut out for them in Rio, trying to carry on their momentum in their quest for another gold medal. Reporting for the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Ben Cento.
In more Olympic news, world number three golfer Jordan Spieth of the United States says withdrawing from the Rio Games was probably the hardest decision of his life.
This was harder than trying to decide what university you go to, whether to turn professional and leave school. This was something I very much struggled with. I bounced back and forth with. Why was it so hard? Well, because I'm a huge believer in Olympic golf. I'm a huge believer in playing for your country. I absolutely look forward to Summer and Winter Olympics. It's the most exciting sporting event for me to watch. It'll be really, really tough to watch. In weighing risk and health concerns, I made it this route.
American star Jordan Spieth spoke in Scotland, where he'll tee off Thursday in the first round of the 145th British Open at Royal Troon Golf Club. The defending British Open champion is another American, Zach Johnson. Reporter Nick Dye asked Zach if he has a different or changed appreciation of the Open after lifting the trophy last year.
You know, different, no. Changed, not necessarily. I've had some friends that have had that title, but I think heightened. Certainly the appreciation was there. That's been heightened. The inspiration's been there. That's been heightened. The admiration, significantly heightened. And just the fact, I'm just in awe. I mean, I was in awe immediately on 18 green at St. Andrews, and that sort of awesome feeling has just continued. You just really get an appreciation for the game, certainly where it was founded here in Scotland, and then this tournament in general, what the RNA has maintained and certainly cultivated. You can't not, as an athlete, as a golfer, appreciate and really respect what the Claret Jug symbolizes.
I think you've always been aware of the history and the tradition. Mm. How is it being part of it?
Surreal, humbling, but also just absolutely fantastic. I've had some close friends that have won that Claret Jug, and I've had a healthy jealousy of those names engraved on that jug, and to have mine, sitting beside them is remarkable, and I'm still pinch myself in that regard. So, everything in the last 51 and a half weeks has just been, with that jug, has been fantastic. Certainly a responsibility that goes along with it. I mean, it is an old piece of silver, and it represents everything that's good in the game of golf. But the responsibility has been one I've embraced and enjoyed, and so has my friends and family.
I imagine you've become firm friends with the Claret Jug.
Yes.
You've had to part ways. How was that?
It was not easy. but we said our piece. She was very kind to me for the last so many odd weeks, and just, you know, again, seeing people embrace that, you know, close friends and family, has probably been my fondest memories. And whether it's a kid that's, you know, playing golf at the age of 10, or whether it's an adult that is shocked that they're actually getting to hold it. I mean, it doesn't really, there's so many good stories that go along with it. So that's been the coolest thing, is taking that thing to places it just doesn't normally get to.
I recall you saying very modestly, self-deprecatingly last year, that you're an under-the-radar kind of player. Mm. How are you approaching this one when you're returning as champion?
Well, that's kind of how I try to mentally go into things. I have that mindset. I mean, you have to have a confidence, you know, certainly a quiet confidence in yourself. However, if you're not talked about, that's not a bad thing. Use that as motivation. I mean, if anything, that's kind of what can fuel you. I love seeing the underdog stories. I mean, that's probably what I was alluding to. I love seeing the teams, the individuals that rise up when they're not supposed to. I'm not so sure I necessarily fit in that category in a lot of respects anymore. However, I try to put myself in there and just fight. I just love that fight.
Do you like the challenge, the fight that awaits at Royal Troon?
No, I don't. I love it. Absolutely love it. I love everything about it. I love the fact that everybody tees off on number one. What you see is what you get. The elements that are presented, they could change. They may stay consistent. The ball rolls. You got to hit it left. You got to hit it right. You got to hit it high. You got to hit it low. I love everything that it demands. And I've said that since day one prior to winning the Claret Jug. So it's just not a tournament that requires a whole lot of motivation for me to get ready for.
That's American Zach Johnson, the defending champion at the British Open Golf Tournament. And Zach was talking with reporter Nick Dye at the Royal Troon Golf Club in Scotland. Now let's go to San Diego, California, where the American League defeated the National League 4-2 in Major League Baseball's 87th annual All-Star Game. Joining me now here in Studio 22 for some All-Star talk is Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department. Sporty greetings, Dan.
Hi, Sonny. Good to be here as usual.
Great to have you back, Dan. Let's begin with the game itself. Who were the key players for the American League All-Stars?
It's good to be talking some baseball again. I think the last time we mentioned baseball on this show, it was snowing outside in early April.
That's right. Quite chilly.
It was great to see the game in San Diego with the bright sunshine during the first pitch. Everybody always loves playing there. It's a good atmosphere. The weather's always good. It's not too hot and humid like it is here in Washington, D.C. The Kansas City Royals players, who people may be familiar with from last year's World Series when the Royals defeated the New York Mets to win their first World Series since the mid-1980s, Eric Hosmer and Salvador Perez hit home runs in the second inning to help the American League win the game 4-2. It was a good pitching performance by both teams. There weren't that many runs scored, but the home runs carried the day.
Dan, the All-Star Game traditionally marks the halfway point of the Major League Baseball season. Does the game have any significance outside of it being a popular exhibition contest?
So if you remember when you and I were growing up, the All-Star Game was the highlight of the summer in some ways. Baseball wasn't on TV 24/7 like it is now in the U.S. You couldn't watch all of your team's games necessarily, and now you can watch all 162 if you want to. Baseball developed something called interleague play back in the 1990s, which allowed American League teams and National League teams to play against each other in the regular season. And before interleague play, the All-Star Game was a great opportunity for fans to see players that they had only read about in the newspaper. They didn't get a chance to see them on TV that often. Somewhere down the line in the All-Star Game, there was an extra inning game, which means the game was tied after 9 innings, and the teams were running out of pitchers. So they had to call the game a tie. And now, instead of the game being able to end in a tie, there has to be a winner, because the winner for the league, so in this case, the Kansas City Royals, who won for the American League, get home field advantage in the World Series for whichever team makes the World Series from their league.
And let me say a very sporty hello to all my Facebook Live friends. Welcome back to Studio 22. I'm chatting with Dan Friedel of the VOA's Learning English Department about the 87th Major League Baseball All-Star Game. The American League defeated the National League 4-2. Dan was talking about how the American League now will have home field advantage in the World Series later this season. Dan, as we look at the midseason break, the midseason All-Star break, which teams have been the surprise teams, in your opinion, in Major League Baseball?
So, to some degree, the surprise is that most of the predictions from back in March of teams like the Washington Nationals and the Chicago Cubs and the San Francisco Giants all doing well have held true. A lot of times those early season predictions are foiled by an injury or a losing streak or something like that. But the biggest surprise team for me has been the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers have been a strong team in the last decade or so, but they didn't start out that hot, but now they have the best record in the American League, and they look like serious contenders for the World Series.
Dan, one of the older players in the 87th All-Star Game, 40-year-old David Ortiz, he's kind of defying his age at this point, isn't he?
I can appreciate how great of a season he's having, since I'm 40 years old myself. Ortiz, one of the most powerful offensive players in recent years. He's a 10-time All-Star, and he's really the iconic player of the Boston Red Sox in his career. He didn't start his career with the Red Sox. He actually was on property of two other teams before finding himself as the Red Sox designated hitter and first baseman, helping the Red Sox break their streak of many years of not winning the World Series. But Ortiz has 22 home runs, 72 runs batted in. He's getting hits over 30% of his plate appearances. He's leading the league in a couple of offensive categories. He's on track to have as good of a season as he did almost 10 years ago. So Ortiz made his last All-Star appearance. He got on base, and then he was taken out of the game for a pinch runner, and he got a huge ovation from the fans, who really respect what he's done in his career. He got hugs and high fives from all of the teammates on the American League team. Of course, some of those players hate to play against him during the season, but they were happy to be on the same team with him during the All-Star game.
Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department. Stick around, Dan. And let me give a quick Sunny Side of Sports shout-out for my friend way down in Rio de Janeiro, the 2016 Olympic city of Rio de Janeiro, Luis Piazzet. Luis knew that I have trouble palming a basketball these days, so Luis gave me the proper size basketball. I can now palm this with authority. And check this out. Luis even autographed it for me. And we'll be hearing more from our friend Luis Piazzet. Here we go. Whoa. We'll hear from Luis during the Rio Olympics. We look forward each week to his reports from Rio. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Wednesday?
Well, the All-Star Gamer hashtag ASG has been trending all through last night into today. And we'll start with the man we were just talking about, David Ortiz. David Ortiz, according to Major League Baseball's social media analytics account, racked up more than 56,000 mentions on Twitter during the game. Mm. So a lot of social media activity, a lot of praise for him in what is his last All-Star game before his retirement later this year. someone that's pretty universally loved by fans throughout Major League Baseball. I was watching the game last night, there were lots of words of praise for him. So a nice way to end his career and send him off on his last All-Star game. But the other thing I was struck by in looking at the social media is how much behind-the-scenes content we're getting from the All-Star game. We're seeing scenes of the players in the locker rooms getting ready, putting on their jerseys. We're seeing them joke around. It's a rarity that a lot of these players get to play with each other on this one night when they're maybe on opposing teams throughout the rest of the year in the National League and the American League. But it really does show the kind of the camaraderie throughout Major League Baseball and how there are friendships. They may be on opposing teams, but they're still very friendly. So it was very nice to see that. And then the one tweet, as we've been talking about, that I saw that I think exemplifies how the result of the game turned out. They said it was the Kansas City Royals versus the National League. And that really was, you know, you had quite a few hits from Kansas City. Some big scoring from them, of course, makes sense considering they're the defending World Series champions. You also had the Chicago Cubs, the entire infield. That's first base, second base, third base, and shortstop. All four of those positions were started by Chicago Cubs players. It's only the second time in Major League Baseball history that that's happened with a team. And actually, the other team was their rival, the St. Louis Cardinals, back in the 1960s that did that. So a lot of social media chatter about that said, maybe just put the whole Cubs team out there. I mean, make it Cubs versus Royals, maybe a preview for the World Series coming up in October. Who knows?
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. I'm checking my Facebook page right now, and who should check in but none other than Luis Piazzay, my buddy down in Rio. And Luis says the size of the basketball is not related to my skills. It's related to the size of his paycheck, is the way Luis put it, the size of his pocket. So Luis, maybe budget conscious Luis sending me this little basketball, but quick shout out again for Luis. I do appreciate the basketball. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, let's go to football, and we're talking American football here, and specifically Tom Brady. And it's kind of, we have a Boston theme, I think, today. We start with David Ortiz, who plays for the Boston Red Sox. Now we go to Tom Brady, who plays for the New England Patriots in the National Football League. And a court has ruled against his appeal in the so-called Deflategate scandal. Now, this is the long scandal that's played out. Did Tom Brady know that some footballs were deflated partially to make them easier to catch before a playoff game? So this court has said no to his appeal. They've already decided that he was going to miss four games, be suspended for four games. And the court, after he appealed that, they said, nope, you're going to have to keep that suspension. So there's now talk on Twitter, and this would be fascinating, that the case could go to the U.S. Supreme Court, that Tom Brady could work his appeal up to the Supreme Court. I don't know what the likelihood is of that happening. He might just say after this point, you know what, I'll take the suspension. But that would be fascinating if one of the biggest sports stars in the U.S. goes to the highest court in the land over this Deflategate scandal. The hashtags we're seeing, you know, we're of course seeing #Deflategate, #TomBrady, #FreeBrady is one we're seeing, especially around Boston. I've seen a couple different articles that said Boston Twitter is going nuts right now with all these Free Brady hashtags. They're not pleased about this ruling. And one person, I think this is something maybe to think about and chew on. They say, don't the federal courts have anything better to deal with?
Yeah,
so depending on what side of the issue you're on, it's a valid question. Maybe they could focus on other things other than Deflategate. But there'll be a lot of talk about this, I'm sure, if he decides to go up to the Supreme Court or anything that happens if he takes the suspension. The football season's coming up in just a few short months, so maybe we'll get a sense of that in the coming months. But lots of talk on social media about this ongoing case.
Deflategate, a story that just won't go away on social media, Andrew.
And that was something, another tweet that I saw. Someone says, really? We're talking about Deflategate again? The hashtag is back. It's like the hashtag that'll never end. So I have no doubt we're going to see when the football season starts in August and September, we're going to see Deflategate there again if he gets his suspension, but it is the hashtag that won't go away.
Andrew Palcheski, he never takes the wind out of the Sunny Side of Sports. He keeps us properly inflated. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks also to Dan Friedel of VOA's Learning English Department. And that wraps up the July 13th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks also to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. More thanks for VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns the recent spate of deadly terrorist attacks that have taken hundreds of lives from Istanbul to Dhaka to Baghdad to the attacks in Saudi Arabia. These acts have shown no respect for human life, whether young or old, male or female, Muslim or non-Muslim. These attacks were intended to spread terror and fear. They occurred at the end of Ramadan, the holiest time of the year for Muslims. Indeed, a Daesh spokesman himself called for targeting during this holy month. So what's obviously evident, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby, is that Daesh certainly has no respect for Muslim life, life in general, or any respect for Islam itself. The United States remains extremely concerned about ISIL's ability to inspire terrorist attacks and is working with its partners to help halt the spread of terror. This requires a multi-pronged approach that includes working with partners from around the world to cut off Daesh's messaging, financing, and recruitment networks. The U.S. and its allies are also expanding their ability to identify, disrupt, arrest, and prosecute suspected foreign terrorist fighters. The United States now has information-sharing agreements with 55 international partners to identify and track the travel of suspected terrorists, and the number of countries contributing foreign terrorist fighter profiles to Interpol has now increased by some 400% over the last 2 years. At least 35 countries have arrested foreign terrorist fighters or aspirants, and 12 countries have successfully prosecuted foreign terrorist fighters. At least 45 countries have enacted laws or amendments to create greater obstacles for foreign terrorist fighters traveling into Iraq and Syria. The U.S. is also focused on discrediting the violent messages that Daesh puts out on a daily basis on social media that they use to inspire and to recruit people. In an effort to defeat ISIL at its core in Iraq and Syria, the Counter-ISIL Coalition has accelerated the campaign against Daesh in those countries. Over the last 6 months, there has been significant progress retaking territory and diminishing the group's finances and access to additional manpower. The United States will continue the fight against ISIL on all fronts until the terrorist group is defeated.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. In the afterglow of America's Independence Day celebrations, host Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss what independence has meant and means for Africa. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Political conventions are a critical part of the American electoral process. Our job is to put the conventions, the candidates, and the issues into context for our listeners. Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the Republican and Democratic parties' conventions starting July 18th on VOA.